All right, tonight is anniversary night. The format of the tonight's meeting will be a main speaker who will speak for 25 minutes, followed by an information break and the anniversary celebrants. Our main speaker tonight is Adrian.
How you doing, everybody? My name is Adrian. I am an alcoholic. It's good to be here. Thanks, Cynthia, for the nice invite to speak at my home group tonight. I always get a little nervous before I speak, you know, and I'm thinking there when I'm sitting. I mean, it's okay for me to crash the car into the middle of a field in the middle of the day and fall out of it drunk, you know, or wreck the Christmas family party and not bat an eyelid, but speak in front of a room full of drunks, I get a little nervous, huh? People that don't even like me and are going to judge me, you know, so I think that's something of a distortion of values, right? I'm a member of the Atlantic Group and, you know, really, really happy to say that. I have a sponsor that kind of directed me here close to 4 years ago. I just spoke to him yesterday, and he loves all you guys. I don't know why, but he tells me if I keep coming, I will too. And, he directed me here when I kind of came to the Atlantic Group to take shelter in a period that was really tough in my life where the beast was awake, let's say, and, you know, I didn't know what was going on, and I had that conversation with my sponsor on the phone, and he said, I think you should join the Atlantic Group, and I nearly swallowed the phone. And I said, I think you're out of your mind, and I was totally insulted by it. Things that my sponsor has a real great bag of he's got a really great bag of tools of working with people. He never said another word, and he let it penetrate into me. And it was like a pinball in a pinball machine. So after a year, I came and joined. You know, and I remember standing up at the Thursday night meeting and saying I'm a member of the group and everybody really welcoming me. And there's people in this room tonight that came forward, as they always do, to people that walk in that door. And I think that's the mark of a great meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, when people come forward and say hello, welcome to the group. And you guys give me endless opportunities to do service and stuff right away, and you bang me right into the middle of here. And I think it's been one of the greatest things that's happened in my recovery. You know, it really has. And, you know, when I go out on the road, and, you know, I got a good tip for people that travel out on the road. You know, if you want to find a really good meeting, just go to the local AA clubhouse and ask them, what meeting really sucks around here? And that's the one to go to. That's always the best meeting. That's always the best meeting, so it is. And so I'm really happy to be here tonight, guys. And just so you know, I didn't get this accent drinking Irish whiskey. I was born and raised in a place called Belfast in the north of Ireland. And, you know, it was a troubled spot that I kind of grew up in. I grew up right in the middle of West Belfast and grew up in an Irish family. There was five of us. I'm the youngest of a family of five, my mom and dad. And I'll tell you guys, I grew up in the middle of a war in a really happy home. And I come to see that that had a great effect on my life. I don't think it made me alcoholic, but, you know, it definitely contributed to the spiritual malady that I have. I mean, this spiritual malady that we have is constructed of fear and resentment and all these other things. And I think it gave me an experience with it, that's for sure. And, you know, one of the things I've come to see, when you're a child that grows up in a war zone type situation, very early on, you stop looking at life through the lens of innocence and you start looking out at life through the lens of ego. And I had to grow up pretty quickly. And I did start to grow up pretty quickly. You know, I'd quit drinking twice by the time I was 11. And there's actually some truth to that. There really is. I had a battle with alcohol from when I was a kid because there was so much anxiety going on inside of me. You know, our book talks about my problem centers in my mind. And then it goes on later on to tell me it kind of sprinkles that in, your problem centers in your mind. And I agree with that, Adrian. But then as we kind of roll on through the pages, it hits me over the head with what my problem really is. Selfishness and self-centeredness, which comes from self-centered fear. But there's something even underneath that I've come to see, which has been with me from my first thinking, anxiety. Sometimes it's conscious and sometimes it's unconscious. And I think one of my first thought systems around that anxiety, that unconscious fear that I have was that, you know what, I'm not good enough and I'm not going to make it through this. I'm really not. And what started to happen, guys, it's almost like I had an invisible sack over my shoulder. And I started to throw parts of my true self into it by saying yes when I meant no and no when I meant yes. And the lying and the robbing and the cheating and the stealing, all because I felt so weak inside, all because I almost felt like abandoned from an early age. And I became a little barrier, you know? And I'm already looking at Wes at 6, 7, 8, 9 years of age to get out of this head that's driving me crazy. And, you know, you do different things to do it, but, you know, I remember my first pop from alcohol. I'm not one of these guys that, you know, had my first pop and would pee, bop it, do. I hated it the first couple of times I drank it. I really did. But I remember standing outside that disco that night, guys. Remember discos, do you? You know, I remember standing outside that disco in West Belfast that night, so afraid for my life, guys, but so afraid not to do it because of the peer group pressure and having that first pop, guys, of Old English cider, that whole bottle. And I remember my friends kind of rolling around and being sick and stuff, and I was like, "What? Yes, this is it. This is it." We use a lot of different Latin words in Alcoholics Anonymous to describe things. I'm going to use a Gaelic word that describes my alcoholism as best I can describe it. And it's a Gaelic word for whiskey, and it's called Ishkabaha. And what it means is water of life. And that's what happened right there, guys, the water of life. Don't be impressed with the Gaelic word. It's the only one I know. And guys, off I went on a tangent. You know, the youngest kid of this family that had all these dreams and wanted to be a ball player and wanted to do all this stuff. From that moment, guys, I didn't become alcoholic right away. But what I'd done, guys, in my early teen years was I turned my will and my life over to alcohol and didn't even realize I was doing it. Somewhere in there, I made a decision that this is it. I knew right away this takes the fear away. And I knew right away from the beginning, guys, that it was all powerful. And, you know, all the stuff that happens to alcoholics, it started right away. So it did. There was trouble from the beginning. I love what my sponsor says. You know, there's three different stages of alcohol. There's the fun stage, then the fun problem stage, and then just the problem stage. And that's how it went for me, you know. Right from the beginning, the hospital started. Hospital after hospital, guys, right from the beginning. And I, you know, I had an older brother, and he's kind of cut from the same cloth as me. And it was right in my face. He's 10 years older than me. Right in my face. It's almost like I watched my brother fall off the top of the alcoholism tree and started hitting all the roots and branches and everything on the way down. And like 10 years later, guys, I just fell off right behind him. And the sad thing is, he's still falling, you know? And I made a decision, guys, at 26 years of age, that I'm getting off here. I don't want to do this. I'd lived a hard life, guys, up until I was 26, and it was no one's fault, only mine. But you see, I'm a guy, you know, it talks about in our literature that, you know, in the second step about, you know, personal relationships, we're having problems with our personal relationships. I was having problems with my personal relationships from the Christian Brothers taught me at school. I had resentment in my heart, in my gut, from the Christian Brothers taught me at school. It wasn't until I got the Alcoholics Anonymous, guys, that I started to find out about this stuff, find out about this condition that I'd carried with me my whole life. I remember when I got here, I got sober in Belfast, spent my first year in a meeting back there in the Lisburn Road. I had my first sponsor, my first home group, everything back there, guys. It was a really secure place. And I ended up coming back to America. I'd lived here before. And I remember talking to a friend one day on the phone, and he asked me, "How you doing, Adrian?" I had about 6 weeks sober. And I said, "I'm doing really well, you know, but my mom's driving me crazy. You know, I can't live in the house another day with her. You know, my boss at work and the guys that are," he said, "Adrian, you're not doing well at all. That's resentment." And I said, "Oh, I got lots of that." And he goes, "Oh, I know. I know." But you see, the point I'm trying to make is, I never had anything else to compare that with. That was like my condition, guys. And the alcohol took it away. But it took everything else away as well, guys. You see, alcohol's the great remover, isn't it? It takes everything for you. And at the beginning, you know, the things that it took for me, like a cracked tooth and a broken nose and landing up in the ER, I mean, they're small things. And then it starts to take your mother's pocketbook and your father's life savings to finance the lifestyle that I'm living. And then it starts to take your integrity, and it starts to take everything that you have. It'll take the lining off your stomach and come back for your mind. And that's what it done to me. And you know what, guys? There's many things that brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous. A life of violence that, you know, I'm not ashamed of or proud of today. I'm really not. You know, I was a blackout drinker, guys. coming out of blackouts, waking up on a boat, going to a different country, and not even thinking twice about it. You know, this is life. Let's just go. You know, coming out of blackouts, guys, were police officers and soldiers over the top of me. I was, in my teens, I was locked up in two army military barracks for drunk and disordered behavior. You know? And I'd come out of these blackouts, but they weren't the things that brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous, guys. The things that brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous was leaving my dad's house. One morning, my dad's a big, strong, strapping Irishman who was nothing but kind to me. My dad did not even make my resentment inventory. He'd done nothing but good for me. And I remember looking back at him one morning, and he was crying, and the tears were rolling down his cheeks, and he said to me, "I don't know how you can do to me what you've done to me in this family after everything that I've done for you. I want to die today. I want to die." And what I'd done over a period of time, I'd stole his whole life savings from him to finance my drinking habits and the lifestyle that I was living. And you know what I'd done? I looked into a man's eyes that morning that I'd broke his spirit. See, I break your spirit because mine's is broken. And I just ripped my way through everyone's lives, guys. My girlfriend that I'd moved in with pretty young, you know, we'd live together and I'd go disappear because I was a binge drinker, guys. I was a daily drinker for most of my drinking. But when you're kind of in a relationship, you can't go drinking every day. You got to cut it down to about 5 days a week, you know? And I remember leaving our house one Thursday and she said, "You're not coming back again, are you? You never do. You go drinking Thursday. You don't come back Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. You come back here Tuesday when you got no money for me to feed you. And you never come home, Adrian. Why don't you come home?" And I was beginning to think that I was maybe homophobic or something, you know? Yeah, right. And the last conversation I ever had with her was when she dropped me off at my mom's house in her car. And she was crying and she said, "You know what? I really love you, but I never want to see you in my life again." And I've never seen her again. And I tried to make amends, and I tried to make contact, and I was advised to stay away. And we got to do what people ask us to do. And there was just a whole series of this went on and on and on, guys. And, you know, it wasn't the things like that. It wasn't like waking up in the emergency room and stuff, guys, that brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous. It really did. See, alcoholism's a funny disease. You wake up in the intensive care unit, and you're getting your head stapled back together. And you're in there for a while, and you lick your wounds, and you calm down, and, you know, you say you're not going to do it again and stuff, and you're having a nice rest and stuff in there. But you see, you forget, and you get the staples out, and the man comes back again. Just like it says in there, my main problem really centers in my mind. You see, I got a mind that keeps tricking me back into drinking, keeps tricking me back into doing it. And I'll say to any newcomer that's in here tonight that hasn't received spiritual help or got a sponsor or anything yet, it's not if you go drinking again, it's when you go drinking. That's the bottom line. And I never heard that in my first times in Alcoholics Anonymous, guys. I really didn't. And I'm a man that started to see that he had trouble in his life. And I started to come in through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, in and out, in and out. I was that guy. And Harab was the guy that came in and out. My best friend got sober back in Belfast. He was going through a really terrible time, and he came to me and asked me for help. And there was a treatment center that I was supposed to go to but didn't go to, and I directed him to that. And he called me up, and he says, "I'd like you to come see me at the treatment center." And I went and I seen him at the treatment center, and he told me he'd found this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't like the sound of it already. I really didn't. And he started telling me about this book and that he'd started going to these meetings and stuff, and I thought he'd become some kind of religious freak or something. And I was still drinking, and I was asking him, "Do you want me to bring something in for you? I mean, you know, can maybe straighten you out, like, you know?" And he was like, "No, I'm really done with that. And when I get out of here, man, I'd love to come have a conversation with you." And I was like, "No problem." And he got out for the 3 week. It was a 6 week program. He got out in the third weekend, and he came to see me. And he gave me a check, and he says, "You know, man, I've known you for a long time, and there's been times I have not been a good friend to you. And I owe you this, and I want you to take it, and I want you to know that I love you, and if there's anything that I can do to make your life better." And I was like, "Oh my God." That made me feel weird. And what he was doing, guys, was he was making an amends to me. And he started 12-stepping me bit by bit. And when he got out of that place, words, guys, you can tell me anything, and words really don't mean anything to me, but when I see it happening in front of me, to a guy that used to do what I do, that really impressed me. And there was a light that went off in my head, guys, and I didn't know it was going off at the time, but God was at work. And he put many people in my life, guys, long to get me to you. to get me to you. And I wish I could say that he 12-stepped me and I got the Alcoholics Anonymous that time and I stayed, but I didn't. But he did 12-step me and he got me to Alcoholics Anonymous. But unfortunately, there was four more years of real hell for me to go through. And I at this stage, guys, I'd probably drank 6 or 7 years past where I should have been drinking. And when you're living the life that I'm living and you're lying and you're cheating and you're stealing and you're throwing everything into this sack behind you and you're selling your soul and you're thinking, you know what, there's something's going to change this. Maybe if I get a different girl, that'll change it. And you get a different girl and it doesn't. Or maybe if I get a new car, you know. Again, I love what my sponsor says, the shine wears off after a while. But why does it wear off? Because I've tried to buy happiness one more time and it doesn't work. And I got this feeling in my gut that nothing takes it away. There's nothing seems to take it away. And I got a voice inside my head that it won't shut off. And it goes on and on and on. You're ugly. You're too this. You're too that. And the only thing that shuts it off is booze. But at this stage, guys, the booze is not shutting it off. It's really not. And I'm in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when you start coming to Alcoholics Anonymous and you're still drinking like it, you can't stop thinking about Alcoholics Anonymous. And everywhere you go, you meet people from Alcoholics Anonymous. Everywhere you go. And every time you're in a situation, you come out of it, there's somebody from Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, waving at you. Are you coming back? You know, we still love you. And I'm like, oh, my God. I did not want to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I done everything that I could. I did not want to come here. I had to come here, guys. I was driven to come here. Alcoholics Anonymous was the last shot on the block for me. You know, that last 4 years, guys, of drinking. You know, I had suicidal ideation for many, many years. But rather than come back to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'd seen the steps on the wall, I'd seen the fourth step, I'd seen the amends, I had caused too much carnage and trouble in my life, guys, to have a go at that. There was things that I'd done that I knew that I couldn't share with anybody. There was things that I'd done that I wasn't supposed to share with anybody just through code on the streets that I grew up in. And I had this conversation going on in my head. And it's a horrible place to be, guys. That head full of AA. And you can't get drunk anymore, and you're waking up in the morning, and you're full of guilt, and you're full of remorse, and you're still you're still doing the things that you're trying to stop doing. You're afraid to watch the local news because you don't know what happened last night. I think the worst feeling, guys, that I've ever had in my life is waking up in a prison cell covered in blood, trying to figure out if it's mine or not because of what happened when I was drinking the night before. I think that's the worst feeling in the world. I think the next worst feeling in the world of that is getting out of the psych ward after trying to take your own life because you just can't stop drinking and you just can't shut it off. You really can't. And you've promised your family, you've promised your sisters, you've promised everybody that that's it. I'm not going to do it again. And you get out of the psych ward and you go straight back to the bar and you take that little bracelet off your arm and you throw it in the ice tray and you say, I'll have a double. And your sister sits in front of you and she says, are you out of your mind? And the honest answer to that is no, I'm stuck in my mind. I'm delusional. And delusional simply means stuck in the mind. And there's no way out of that. And that's alcoholism. That's it right there. I can't stop. Now, it takes different forms and we have different patterns and stuff, but that's the way it was for me. And I lived in a hell, guys, until I couldn't take it anymore. On February 16th, 2001, I come out of another blackout, the last blackout that I was ever to come out of. And I got a guy standing in front of me, and his face is pretty bad. And I'm covered in blood again, and there's people screaming. And my friend dragged me away, and he brought me to an after hours on the other side of Belfast, and I walked into the after hours. And something happened when I went into that after hours. First of all, I got hit in the head with a bottle. And I thought, this is the day I should definitely play the lottery, huh? And I sobered up right away, and I said to myself inside, from inside, this is going to stop. I'm never going to do this again. And that night, guys, I had my last drink. And I walked home. I walked and I went back to my mom's house because that's where I was living. I always went back to mom's. I'd lived in New York, hit a bottom, back to mom's. London twice, back to mom's. Glasgow, north of Ireland, back to mom's. And she always took me back because I'm her baby. I'm still her baby today. And she always took me back and she'd never refuse me. But the time would come when she would have to ask me to leave again. And she's never had to ask me to leave again. And I remember going into that little front bedroom that I was sleeping in. I mean, it was pathetic. I'm 26 years of age. The rest of the family's moved on. They're doing great things. And I'm sleeping in the little bed with the soccer bedclothes. You know? An absolute success. And I get down on my knees that night. And I remember saying, God, you know, if you're there, I really need your help. I really need you to come right now. You see, guys, on hangover morning, I'd surrender to the booze many, many times, but I'd never surrender to a higher power. There's a big difference, sir. There really is. And I think once we ask, I mean, I meet guys all the time. I meet guys all the time that come in and out of here. And, you know they're just not done, and there's nothing you can say to them. I know what that's like. I know what it's like walking into a meeting and the old-timers surrounding you and going, you know, kid, we've been seeing you coming around here. What are you doing to stay sober? And I'm like, well, I joined the gym, you know? I mean, and they'd be like, you're going to be the fittest man in the nut house, you know? And I know what it's like coming in to do that, putting other things ahead of your sobriety, thinking that things are going to fix me, guys. Well, I came in the Alcoholics Anonymous with an attitude that I'd never come in before. I rolled up my sleeves and I said, you know what, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it like I've done everything else in my life. I'm going to do it full throttle. And things started to change right away. And if you're new, guys, and you don't know what to do, and you're afraid in here, I get it. I'm going to pass you on a tip that I got from a woman in a meeting back in Belfast at a couple of days sober. She said, if you don't have a sponsor, go home and sit on the end of your bed tonight and ask for one. Simple. The next day, I had a sponsor. I met Kevin. That's who started to explain to me what alcoholism really is. That I have a physical aspect of alcoholism, a mental aspect, that I have an illness, and that I can't stop it by myself. And he started to explain a lot of things to me, guys. He started to explain why my life was the way it was. And I asked him, what could I do about it? And he says, I don't know, but I can show you what I've done. And we started on a journey, guys. When I walked in through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous that time, I started on a journey. And I thought I was coming in to just be with a bunch of old people for the rest of my life, you know? And what happened, guys, that door opened and I walked into a new and wonderful spiritual journey. Right through the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And he says, listen, man, when it tells us to take a right, we'll take a right. When it tells us to take a left, we'll take a left. When it asks us to pray, we'll pray. Any problem with that? No. He was a guy that told you if you didn't want to do something, don't let the door hit you on the backside on the way out. I'm not here to motivate people to do this. If alcohol hasn't motivated you to do this, how can I? You know? I don't mess around. We're either doing it or we're not. That's the bottom line. I can't help everybody. You know what? This program has totally transformed my life. It really has. All from helping people. That's the first thing Kevin told me. He says, you're going to have to help people. And I was so selfish and self-centered, I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to help people, guys. And I thought I was going to have this little tiny life in Belfast. Within a year, guys, the day after my first AA birthday, I was back on a flight to New York. Within 2 years, married, had a daughter, living in a really beautiful place, had a car, had everything, guys, had the world at my feet within 2 years. And I was like, wow. How did this happen? I'm a guy that walked off the streets of West Belfast out of a war in the Alcoholics Anonymous with cracked teeth, a couple of broke eyes, no watch in my arm, no driver's license, no bank account, no, I had absolutely nothing, guys. Everything that I have in my life today is a result of what's happened in Alcoholics Anonymous. It really has. And it all comes down to helping people, guys. There's a lot more work to it than that. There really is. There's a lot more work to it. You know, I gotta put the food on the table, guys. I gotta eat it. Kevin told me that at the beginning. The food on the table is a step work. It really is. There's three sides to this deal, guys. I know what it's like to just practice one side of it. I know what it's like to practice two sides of it. And I know what it's like to practice all three sides of it. I really have. I've been given a life that's totally beyond my wildest dreams in here. I really have. You know, I'm going to finish with a little quick story. And I remember a guy told me this, and he really explained Alcoholics Anonymous to me in a nutshell. And it's a little Buddhist story, and I'm not a Buddhist, you know, and I love the Buddha nature. But he told me, and he gave me a visual. He says, Alcoholics Anonymous is like this, Adrian. He said, imagine these Buddhist monks, and they're sitting in this big room, this big long room, the length of this church. And they're sitting at these big long tables, and they have these big long spoons. And at the other end of the table is their food bowl, their am bowl, and they're trying to get the spoon, and they're trying to get it, and they're trying to put the food in their mouth, but every time they do it, they're spilling it, and they're knocking the bowls over, and what happens is, you know, they're living in this hell where they can't eat, and they all die of starvation and go to heaven. And someone, one of the monks, figures out when he's in heaven, hold on a minute, how about we get the spoons and we feed the person at the other side of the table, and we all get to eat? Does that not sound like Alcoholics Anonymous? See, that's the deal in here, guys. When I make sure you get fed, I'm already fed. Thanks for having me.